This is KERA News. I'm Rick Holter. For a generation of American listeners, Robert Siegel has been one of the few constants. He's hosted All Things Considered since 1987, through inaugurations and impeachment, through everything from natural disasters to wardrobe malfunctions. Last week, he announced that he'll leave the host desk in January, and his first extensive interview about his departure, it's with KERA. He sat down with me at NPR's headquarters in Washington as part of Thanks Week in D.C. Robert Siegel, welcome to the Friday Conversation.
Thank you.
What's been the biggest change in this job since you took the host chair back in 1987?
I think the items we do have gotten shorter, which is to say they were really long when I started doing the job back in 1987. It was a radical idea that we had three hosts back in 1987, so every third week on average you were doing something else. Now we have four hosts.
Who were those in 87?
In 87, well, it began with just two of us, actually.
Right.
Renee Montagne and I were the only two.
British Prime Minister Thatcher meeting with Soviet leader Gorbachev talks tough.
And Britain's opposition leader predicts elections will be called there soon before bad economic news reaches the voters.
Marine Guards next.
And then the next year, I was on with Noah Adams and Linda Wertheimer. We were cutting quarter-inch audio tape.
Literally cutting tape.
Yes, our rundown for the show, we called it the roadmap, was with a marker on a whiteboard. Today, we're much more technologically sophisticated. We have far more reporters. I mean, when I went to London in, for NPR, I was the whole foreign staff. I was
right,
the beginning
and that was what, 79?
That was 79. Right. 79. In those days, the burden was on us to fill up the show with the news. We couldn't count on very many reporters.
Right. That, yeah. So many people in journalism have been wringing their hands about fake news over the last 6 months and even longer. Has that changed your approach?
It's changed my thinking. I'd like to see my thinking take shape and more work on the air. I think our attitude's been mostly to ignore it.
Right.
So that if you search through our archives, how often did we look at the birther phenomenon and do stories on it? I think typically our attitude was, this is dumb. You know, this isn't worth paying any attention to. And when the governor of Hawaii produced a birth record, you know, that sort of we covered that and that put things to rest. But I'm beginning to think that that's something that newsrooms have to do. We have to both put forward our own good work, and then we probably have to go looking for stupid things that people believe. And if they enjoy a great deal of credence, consider it part of the journalistic mission to disprove stupid things that are out there.
And I guess also kind of dig into a little bit what's at the root of it.
Yes, yeah.
Because the birther thing is a great example of that. Yeah. Even if the story was fake news, there was a kind of unrest.
In some way, I regret that we didn't a few more times find occasions to hear about people who believe this, maybe see why they believe that, and also remind people this may enjoy some belief, but the news isn't a game show. It's not something to see which story most people believe.
A lot of critics have said the media dropped the ball over the last couple of years. Do you feel that?
The media probably did not accurately report on how much discontent there has been in our country, as well as other countries, Britain, France, where I've done a little bit of reporting in the past couple of years, with the status quo. And the argument is that we live among the people who operate the status quo, and we're not likely to see how ineffective their work may be and how much resistance there might be out there to it. Perhaps that's a fair criticism of us. And I think we may be too guided by polls for trying to understand what people think. Polls are imperfect, and they tend to get people down to a limited number of choices in expressing what they think about things. And perhaps that has informed too many narrow interpretations of where the country's at.
When you think about it literally, All Things Considered is such a big challenge. Are there any things you won't consider?
Well, we've done so many programs with so many items that the first issue is it something new? Is it something we haven't done many times before? You know, we try not to ignore the popular culture, to the extent that the popular culture is creative and interesting and artistic in some way. So yeah, there are some things we don't consider, but not a lot.
Is there an interview that you've done that you wish you could do over again?
Oh, there are so many interviews I've done that I wish I could
really?
Do over again, yes. I wish I could do over again the interview that Mara Liasson and I did in the Oval Office with Bill Clinton on mm-hmm. the day when it was revealed that he was under investigation. Mm. I wish I'd stuck with it longer than 5 minutes. We figured that was the beginning of the interview. We had a State of the Union to talk about as well. But I
isn't that interesting?
I have second thoughts about so many things I've done. I wouldn't know where to begin. The most exasperating interview I ever did was with Mel Brooks, who is a riot and whom I could barely get a word in edgewise with. It was when he was up for a Tony for having written the music to the stage version of The Producers.
Ah.
And he kept on saying to me, Siegel, play the music. Just play the music. And then he said, when does this show go on the air?
Don't you think Tony voters would probably be listening to All Things Considered? I mean, they're not just martini drunks. You know what I mean? They get up. They're up in the morning. They listen to, All Things Considered, which is what, 4 p.m.? I mean, they're up by 4.
That's right. He said, probably. Good, I figure that's probably about the time when the Tony jurors will be waking up from their hangover from last night's cosmopolitan drunken stupor, and they'll hear the music and they'll vote for me and they'll give me a Tony. So I wouldn't mind talking to Brooks again.
I want to play a bit of tape
for
you. And
I can hardly wait. Yama Yama, Red Pajama, reportedly reads a story with his mama.
That's awesome.
there was an item. There's this children's book called Llama Llama, Red Pajama, and all these rap artists have done raps based on it.
Edward R. Murrow probably didn't do that during his time.
Probably not, no. But, you know, Edward R. Murrow was also the host of Person to Person. When he mm-hmm. wasn't unmasking Senator McCarthy or he wasn't exposing the mistreatment of farm workers in America, he was interviewing celebrities through a famous haze of cigarette smoke. You know,
right, right.
So Murrow was not, he was no stranger to true showbiz programming on CBS.
But he never did Llama Llama.
I don't think he did. No.
So you're stepping away next January. Have you thought about what's next? I mean, will we hear a Siegel podcast, perhaps?
I think I'm barred by age from doing a podcast. there's some age limit where if you're too old, you can't do a podcast. I don't know. Some maybe, and we'll see what I do after that. But I have a good 6 months to try to figure that one out. You know, it will be with mixed emotions that I stop doing this because it's been the greatest job in the world. I think they did ask me for my application to graduate school. What did I hope to do? I believe I had host a national radio program at a good radio network when I had no reason to expect there would be such a radio network in
right,
existence.
Right.
And lo and behold, one was being cooked up even as I said that. So I'm very lucky.
Robert Siegel, thanks for taking the time.
Rick, you're very welcome. And I look forward to being on KERA and a couple hundred other radio stations for another 6 months yet.